It's cold today. We rode yesterday. Long story, your dropper broke on our ride. And so I just sent you farther up the canyon. I rode back down a little. Which, by the way, I rode from the upper Tanner Skidder to the bottom, and there was no snow, which is crazy for what was that, November 22nd? But anyway, up at Snowbird, it was like nice. You could almost walk around in a t-shirt, and you could just see the inversion bubble over the valley.
Yeah, I was riding my bike on the Albion Basin Road, which is, I don't think you get to do that on very many weeks before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, scary. But you know, and it's weird because it's like there's no snow, but it's also bitterly cold in the valley. It's like that inversion cold. It's kind of what I imagine when people describe East Coast cold. You know, like I know it's different than that, but where it's like, because like, you know, like in a lot of Utah winter days, you go and hike and you get moving, you take your jacket off. It's, you know, out in the sun, but you can't even see the mountains from, you know, 13th East. Like it's pretty gross.
Yeah, it felt pretty midwinter cold today, but I'm wondering if up in the mountains it was probably nice and sunny. And
Zwift was nice and warm. Yeah. There you go.
It's always 70 degrees in Watopia.
There you go. I rode in France today.
Oh, okay.
I know that, I don't know, maybe that makes me a dork, but again, I don't know. I like spinning. I like it as an option. And maybe we'll start with that. Kind of go, there's not a whole lot of news this time of year, but we are going to start Zwift rides. I'm thinking with the holiday, it would be tricky for me to run one this week. Based on the feedback we've gotten, we're thinking we're going to do Thursday nights. If you have really strong feelings about that, you can let us know. But Thursday seems to be pretty open. In the past, people indicated they liked Wednesday. This year, we've had some feedback Thursdays would be better. We'll hold off with the holiday, but like next week, we'll have those scheduled. Tons of fun. We run them for an hour and a half. You can come as long as you want. Can you join late? I should know that.
I don't. As far as I know, I don't think you can. I think you have to be there when it starts.
Or I think you can join within like 5 minutes of it starting, but it'll start you at the beginning and everyone else is not at the beginning.
Yeah, I don't think you can start late. A lot of times I'll go and just like get it started and then go do something else and then come back and it's there ready to go. But
yeah. So that is coming soon. Like I said, all ability levels. If you want to hammer, there's a group that likes to hammer. If you want to chill, there's a group that likes to chill. It's really, really, really fun. And we've made it so you can just click a link and join. We'll throw that on TeamSnap, on Instagram. So look forward to that. That's coming up.
And while we're talking about Zwift, I think I'm going to start a new annual tradition, the 4.5 hours of Tempest Fugit.
Ugh.
And I actually had some people reach back that say they thought it sounded awesome. So Joe, you now have something to do the day after Christmas.
We'll see how I feel. You and your masochist band of brothers can maybe do that. I like Zwift, but I don't know. Even then, there's stuff I have to do within Zwift to make it fun. So if that floats your boat, then more details to come. But I didn't see. I saw one dude out riding today.
Yeah, I think riding today would have been crazy.
Riding today would be fun. And I don't know, also not, you know.
In fact, I haven't really been super motivated to Zwift so far this year because, like, I really have to go out on a ride where I just get way too cold and my feet are numb and my hands freeze and it starts hailing on me or something before I'm like, okay, now it's time.
Yeah, now it's time.
Because when it's been just so nice this season, it's kind of harder to Zwift when it's nice outside. But
and I got to throw out too, Maybird superstar Riker got hit by a distracted driver a couple days ago. He's okay.
Didn't Art O'Connor get hit too?
Art O'Connor got hit. With those two, I'm kind of like, oh man. I guess texting and driving happens any time of year, but be very careful anytime you're out on the roads. And just remember, no one's died Zwifting yet. You could be the first. Make some history there. Both Riker and Art are fine, to my knowledge. With that in mind, I don't know if there's a whole lot of news outside of that.
Yeah, there's no local racing. Running Group is going to be starting up soon. Again, Running Group is just awesome, and we're just so lucky that
I heard someone say once it's like the best part of Maybird, and it's not even biking. Like, it's really fun.
It's really good. Like, I really, really don't like running. I really, really love Running Group. So, yeah, definitely.
Stay tuned.
Yeah.
Coming soon. Outside of that,
you know, I was just thinking, you know, kind of about the next season coming up and where Maybird's been and what we've done. And I was just thinking about a couple of our coaches that have just, they just go like way above and beyond just like being a normal ride leader. And Maybird wouldn't be what it is without these people. There's more people than this, but these two in particular, I was just kind of thinking about this week and just how grateful I am. And, you know, speaking of running group, I've just got to again thank Amy Larkin for all that she does. It's way above and beyond what would be expected.
The call of duty.
Yeah. Like, she just has so much concern for all the people she works with and rides with and just becomes lifelong friends with all of them. And I've had several girls say that they want to be like that when they grow up. And
I want to be like that when I grow up.
You know, and the other one's Brady Preston. You know, he goes way above and beyond, just has so much concern for the people that he rides with. And, you know, and as I was kind of thinking about the purpose of Maybird, it really is that, you know, these athletes that we're riding with right now are fit and healthy while they're in high school. And I just hope that they can look to these role models like these and make that a goal throughout their life to kind of be.
And I will say, all of our coaches exemplify that.
Exactly. And I just was thinking about these two in particular, but there's so many more that have just been such good examples. But I just don't think I thank people enough. And
no.
I'm just truly grateful for it.
And kids don't thank you enough because kids don't get how cool the thing you're doing is. You know, like, I think the older I get and the more my time becomes a precious commodity and the more I want to ride for myself and get better, I'm like, dude, that's cool to give up your time for that. Because, like, I get paid to teach, right? Like, we're not paying these people. Yeah, you know, like, they're not on the clock.
Their time's worth a lot.
I was going to say, like, every professional on the team, I'm like, how much could you theoretically bill for this time? You know,
$300 an hour.
Yeah, if Maybird had to pay these people what they're worth an hour for their brilliance and capabilities, we'd have to charge more. Anyway, but yeah, those guys are awesome. Everyone's awesome. Like, I'll say it again, especially, and I got more feedback to this effect recently, just like, especially with the girls groups, there's something special going on there. Really cool stuff. I'm glad that we're kind of known for that. I'm glad that that's like our thing. I think that's really cool. Yeah. Big thank you to you guys.
Yeah. So, I mean, should we just get going on the topic?
Yeah, it's weird. Usually there's more stuff, but sure. You know, like, it's that time of year. You know, we'll talk about boring races in the Middle East soon. T-Bone Nace won some cyclocross. Whoop-de-doo. Okay. Anyway.
So today's topic is one that, you know, I kind of don't know where to start because it's not one that's super specific, doesn't really apply necessarily to our target audience right now.
Yeah.
But it will soon.
Yeah.
And it's something I don't think we've really talked about directly, but really it does. I think it's important that we kind of talk about these things because it really does fit in with our purpose of creating lifelong athletes, you know. And
should we hit the disclaimers first?
So here's some disclaimers. Okay.
Big disclaimers.
Well, first of all, neither Joe and I were smart enough to get into medical school.
I was, hey, the U business school let me in because Dan donated $5. he donated a drinking fountain at the library. Just kidding. We're not doctors.
Yeah. So
please don't listen to podcasts for medical advice.
And really, especially like the way things are right now, don't really get medical advice from anyone that's not smart enough to go to medical school.
Yes, 100%. So, I also want to say, when we kind of mentioned not like with our target audience, I know that a lot of people who listen to this are adults. I think this is really relevant for them. And it is true that this is relevant for our people who are kind of on the cusp of adulthood, where your life is changing, where the demands on your time are going to become a lot more significant. With that being said, for the 13-year-olds listening to this, this is an in-the-future thing for you, unless your doctor specifically tells you to. And if you're listening to this podcast, that's probably not a conversation you're having with your doctor. This is not a thing you need to be worrying about now at all.
Yeah.
If you have more questions on how this can go wrong, about 2.5 years ago, I made a special about this in my experience. It's tricky because we're a weight-sensitive sport that we do with teenagers, and that's tricky. So again, I did a special. I don't know if anybody ever listened to it, but I did a special a few years ago. I had a really hard time with this in high school. But I've learned a lot since then. So for the adults, I think both of us have some good practical, neither of us are crushing it, but you know, both of us, I think have hopefully have some good practical, stuff that we can help you with.
Okay. So that's a lot of disclaimers. But we're basically the topic today is about weight gain and weight loss. And again, like if you're Andrew Preston or Calvin Christensen or Zoe LeClaire or,
really, if you're any kid on this team.
Well, pretty much any kid that's riding or training seriously, I would go out not that far on a limb to say that if you lost weight, your performance would suffer.
Your performance, no, I'm just going to say, your performance will suffer.
Yeah, your performance
will,
you're
not going faster.
Yeah. So,
I think especially for a lot of girls, you are probably kneecapping yourself by undereating right now.
Exactly. And
I
was going to say,
roll the dice, I would assume.
Yeah, so we're still disclaiming. I'd say for the majority of our youth athletes, I'm way more concerned about underfueling, because yes, underfueling, you know, we've talked about this quite a bit, but really underfueling is the catalyst for overtraining.
Yeah.
And overtraining is the catalyst for burnout.
Yep.
And you know, and I really think that red S is a way bigger problem for athletes training over 10 hours a week than obesity. So yeah.
I do two things I want to throw out. First, I would hazard that like outside of the bike community, this is a big deal. Like the kids I teach, like I would say a third to half are overweight. I don't know what the stats are for Americans, but they're terrible. You know, like this is a really serious thing. And it's a thing that like for me post high school, I struggled with. I think a lot of adults, it's a lot of adults, you kind of get to college, get into your sort of like early 20s and then sort of the mid 20s where I'm at. And this is a really hard thing, but it's also really, it's funny. It's a really simple thing on the surface, but it's much harder in practice. So I hope that's enough disclaimers.
Yeah, I think we spent like 20 minutes disclaiming. So yes, hopefully we're disclaimed.
Yes.
But yeah, like, This really is an incredibly important topic. And, you know, and I think like, you know, if you're an active high school age kid, you've got like a rock star metabolism.
Yes.
And, you know, there's some people that might kind of maintain that later in life than others. And, you know, I think there's a lot of really fast Nike kids now that, you know, when they get into their early 20s, mid 20s, this will become a bigger problem, you know, weight gain will become a bigger problem. And
I'll throw out like, and I'm probably jumping ahead here, but like the laws of thermodynamics dictate that you gaining and losing weight is a function of whether you are eating more or fewer calories than you burn. It is on the surface, at least it's that simple. And that is true. There's a lot of nuance once you dig into that.
Exactly.
It's like, I'll use my little brother as an example. Jacob and I have, at least in theory, pretty similar genetics, right? I like to eat a lot, you know, which is fine. You know, like my weight has been trending very slightly down actually for the last 3 years. But like, I like to eat a whole lot, you know, Jacob, and I think a lot of girls are like this. Some people don't like forget to eat, which is a crazy concept to me, but like some people forget to eat. Some people are good at fueling on the bike. Some people are bad at fueling on the bike. You know, some people know how to cook, some people don't. So like, there are a whole lot of things that play into this, but I will say that for a lot of people, especially a lot of athletes, you get used to eating a certain kind of amount when you are training a ton, and then life comes at you fast. You don't have 20 hours a week to train anymore. I think a lot of people just kind of don't understand. There's a lot of things I didn't understand that I thought was like, oh, well, that's healthy. I'll eat that. That's healthy. You know, and like, I'm not riding very much. And, so we're going to kind of dive into all this stuff.
I mean, you make a really great point, as you tend to do from time to time, that like, honestly, like some of these kids are doing so much work on the bike.
Yeah.
It's difficult.
Yeah.
It's difficult to eat and fuel adequately for the amount of work they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, and, but circumstances are going to change and,
yeah,
and that needs to adjust too. And, you know, and this topic is, as far as lifetime athletes are concerned, is just hugely important. It's hugely important just as part of society as a whole.
Yeah.
I mean, if this topic isn't addressed correctly. You think about all the, like, the heart disease, the diabetes, the high blood pressure, the quality of life, the mental health that's associated with it.
Most people don't live in Utah, right? Like, most people don't live in Utah. The food that is affordable and easy and highly palatable is low in nutrients and really high in calories. Mm-hmm. You know, like, and I think a lot of people kind of look at this as like a moral failing. Individual cases vary, right? But like, I think on average, the world's kind of against you. And people talk about it like it's this great conspiracy cabal, but it's supply and demand. You know, like, people want easy food. I found that, like, I love cooking. I really do. Like, I would cook for fun. If I won the lottery, I'd take cooking classes. I love cooking, right?
I'd take a dance class.
I could tell. No, but it's being a grown up. It's like hard to feed yourself. And I don't even think it's like expensive. Fruits and vegetables are cheap. Like, you can't just eat fruits and vegetables, you know? So it's like, on the surface, you have that equation, right? Do you have a calorie surplus or a calorie, deficit? Yeah. I knew the word. I'm an English teacher. Or a calorie deficit, right? It's like, it's just that simple. But then once you actually get into like living the day to day, and so like the reality, and I think what we're going to push here is not like, here's how you can get your weight as low as you possibly can to maximize performance. I think it's more like, here's how you can make sure that this facet of your health is in a decent spot for the rest of your life.
And that's a really good, the whole emphasis is a healthy weight.
Yes.
Which that means something completely different for different people.
I'm also going to throw out, professional cyclists are not necessarily healthy.
They're not healthy.
They're doing whatever they can to be as fast as possible, at least in theory. It's not. And actually, there's a lot of discourse this year in women's cycling about whether or not, and specifically around Pauline Ferrand-Prevot winning the Tour. And I'm not going to stake a position on it because I don't want to dive into that at all. But like, I also want to say, like, our goal here is like healthy, happy people who can be good leaders and contribute to society, not like, here's so you can shave every single, we're not trying about maximizing watts per kilo here. That's not our goal.
I mean, like,
we're not qualified to
take like myself and Bart Gillespie, for instance.
Yes.
You know, I honestly think, yeah, if I could lose 10 pounds, that would probably be pretty close to my ideal weight.
Yeah.
If I got down to whatever Bart Gillespie weighs, that wouldn't be healthy.
No.
Probably not possible, but,
no.
You know, so, healthy weight is different depending on your height, your size, your lots of things. So it's really,
we're still disclaimering. Look at that.
But you know, like I said, you know, when you're in high school, you kind of have this rock star metabolism. You can kind of get away with things.
When we say metabolism, we really mean you're active. Well,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. And we're going to kind of talk about
what people talk about metabolism like it's this thing, it's like this, you have curly or straight hair, or you have a fast or slow metabolism. That's not how it works.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we're going to kind of get into that. It's super interesting. But things are going to change as you get older, and you know, and it's going to change differently for different people. But, you know, I've seen some really, really fast Nike kids. You see them in their mid-20s and they look completely different once they've kind of stopped riding the bike and stuff. So, you know, and my story is kind of similar. Like, when I was in high school, I was actually in really, really good shape when I was in high school.
It's hard to imagine, but it's true.
Yeah. No, my friends and I, like, we rode mountain bikes a lot. I like to think it was kind of back in the pioneer days of mountain biking a little bit, but we rode mountain bikes a lot, but we also like did this thing, and this was before trail running was even a thing, but we would like try to get like fastest times to certain points up different trails and mountains and stuff. And we would do it a lot of times with like heavy packs. And, you know, I felt like I was in really good shape in high school. You know, but then I spent a couple of years in England. I think I maintained my health pretty well there. I was pretty active over there. And I got home, went to school and started a business. And, you know, this business I was running just took up way too much of my time.
I was born somewhere in there, by the way.
Yeah.
As were several of my siblings.
And yeah. Well, I skipped a few details, you know, but, I got really, really busy. I ate a lot of fast food.
Yep.
Now, the interesting thing is during this period of time, I didn't really put on a whole lot of weight, and that was a lot because I was fairly active. I was, you know, I wasn't exercising a lot, but I was moving around a lot.
Yeah, you weren't doing a desk job.
Yeah. And so I didn't really put on a whole lot of weight, but I wasn't healthy at all. You know, I had, in fact, I went in for a physical once And the doctor noticed my blood pressure was just like off the charts. Like he was shocked and really, really concerned about how high the blood pressure was. And then I ended up, you know, switching over to work for Clyde Companies and started doing what I was doing there for them. But this became more of a desk type job.
Yeah.
And so I had, you know, I wasn't quite as active, but we would like, we'd go out to lunch a lot and we'd go out for like burgers and fries and people are bringing donuts in every day. And I was kind of used to being able to sort of eat what I wanted, not put on.
You're not thinking about it a lot, right?
Yeah. I ended up putting on a lot of weight really fast. And I remember I got this like black fleece vest that
I remember that vest.
You remember that vest?
I remember that vest.
I would wear like everywhere I went. And I hated it when it became too hot to wear it because I kind of felt like that hid the weight I was gaining a little bit, you know? And one time, you know, one time I went to a doctor for a physical for my high blood pressure. And he looked at me, he's like, you got to lose some weight. And I was honestly kind of like, how could he say that?
Yeah.
Cause I still kind of associated myself with my high school athlete right. person. And
you don't stop loving that stuff. You don't stop doing it. Like when we were kids, we'd go mountain biking and we'd hike.
Yeah. And I thought that was still me. And I was a little bit, I don't know, it just kind of hurt my feelings a little bit, you know, but we, and you'll probably remember this, but one time I went with Joe's scout group and they had this scout leader that was just unbelievable. He was kind of like,
in retrospect, he was probably around my age, which is crazy.
Yeah. He was in his 20s. He was really young. He was like a legit mountaineer. Like
he was like a survivalist mountaineer even. Like
he was attending the medical school, really smart guy, just really, really fit. And we went on this activity to Goblin Valley. And this other leader was running up and down the hill with the kids and they were climbing up on top of rocks and down. And I was just trying to keep up with everybody. And I just couldn't, I just wanted to like lay down and fall asleep and my feet hurt. And it was just miserable. And I saw how much fun everybody else was having. And it was really kind of on that trip. I'm like, okay, I need to change something. This doesn't feel good. I don't feel good. And so kind of after that point, I started riding my bike a lot more and I started going on a lot of walks. I started exercising a lot and I ended up losing 20 pounds really, really quickly, relatively quickly. And people commented, I looked better and I felt better. My feet didn't hurt anymore. My blood pressure went down.
And then as you lose that weight, it gets easier to do that stuff, which is another thing where I think you should have some compassion, especially people who get into really bad weight situations. And again, leaving out, you know, choices or whatever, like, it's hard when you're, you know, cause I actually had a doctor's appointment as a kid. I remember it, and I was probably around middle school age where the doctor was like, hey, you're heavier than you should be for your age and your height. Like, and that kind of hurt my feelings. I'd never even thought about it before, but like, I remember like we'd run the mile at school and I couldn't run a mile. I couldn't run anything like a mile, you know, and you make excuses and stuff and go out and play soccer and you're out of breath in 2 minutes and stuff. And so when I found mountain biking, it was kind of a similar thing. I mean, I obviously was in a very different situation, but I think I bet a lot of Nike coaches have this where their kid joins the bike team and they start to ride bikes. I just wonder if that's part of the thing with Nike is the adults like it so much that they rope their kids into it and force, which is more or less what happened to me even, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's really like, it's awesome for the kids, but it's almost equally awesome for the parents to get involved with it.
Yeah.
Like no exaggeration. This sport has saved my life.
Really? Truly? Like how many years do you think you, if you had not made a change versus the you are now, I mean, we're probably talking like 5 or 10 years wouldn't be an exaggeration to say that you're going to live like years that you're going to experience that you wouldn't have otherwise. Right.
Yeah. And I have no, and the thing I sometimes wonder too, is though, like what would have happened if I could have maintained some of that awesome fitness I had as a youth through my 20s and 30s and, you know, would I be in a better place than I am now? I mean, I can't imagine why not, you know?
Right.
So You know, so this is kind of why we have such a strong lifetime athlete emphasis. And we know that you're going to get time crunched. And I think some of the things that we'll talk about today are going to help when you're time crunched, because like I kind of got to a point where exercise got me so far.
Yeah.
You know, exercise dropped me 20 pounds pretty quick. The next little bit
is hard.
And I had to go, you know, I had to start working on some of the things I was eating.
I want to throw out too, and your whole story, you weren't talking about, oh, and then athletically I was able to be this much faster up a hill. Like, you're talking about just your life getting better. Like, athletic performance aside. I mean, I'm sure you would, if you were racing bikes back then, you would have seen like an improvement, but you're not. But I think I probably speak for both of us. Like, I want to make sure that I, you know, being, I'm 26 now, I'm done growing, you know, and I'm in that time crunch part of my life. Like, I'm not really interested in, I mean, it's cool if I perform better in races, but I'm interested in being healthy and happy. That's the goal. Yeah, right?
Exactly. And, you know, and as you get more fit, this stuff's more fun.
Right.
You know, like people out there that, you know, they're carrying a lot of extra weight, trying to ride up a hill. It's hard as you get
trying
more
to ride
fit.
Trying to ride downhill, it's harder.
Yeah. As you get more, as your body feels better, as you're healthier, as it just becomes more and more fun. And, you know, you mentioned before, like there's the rule of thermal dynamics where like,
I just nailed that. The rule of thermal dynamics.
You back that up?
No.
Okay. I'm having
like I have a title.
A mini stroke right
yeah,
now.
There you go.
Okay. Sorry. But that's basically, you know, really, is it as simple as just like how do the calories you consume?
Haha. Yes. And it's like, yes, but it's also like you cannot perfectly measure how many calories you're absorbing and how many calories you're burning.
Yeah.
You just can't. Right. If you could know that, it is true, but it's also more complicated.
Yeah.
Right?
So it really is as simple as calories in versus calories out, but how you measure the calories in versus calories out and the things that are involved in what makes calories go out, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, how you burn calories is really, really complicated. And it's,
yep.
So it is that simple, but it's not
but it's
simple
not. Yeah.
At all. So, I mean, so if as simply as I can put it, if you consume more energy than you burn, you're going to get heavier. And that could be either through growth or fat storage.
I can't believe I haven't mentioned that. And maybe I can't remember if we have, but like, that's the other thing is, again, for our teenage athletes, you are growing. If you're 13, you need to get heavier. If you stopped growing where you are now, that's a really considerable yeah. medical problem that would be treated with.
And it takes a calorie surplus to grow.
Yes.
But one thing that I think, is it the same for everybody?
No.
No, it's not. Like,
Well, like, yes, the rule's the same, but like, no.
And I think the thing we need to ask is so like, why is it easier for some people than other people?
It's an interesting question.
And there's a lot of factors. You know, we talk about Jacob, mm-hmm. the middle brother, all the time.
The elusive, some of the Green Boys dealt with him briefly for a time. The elusive Draper brother.
Yeah.
Who's different than, if you only know Andrew and I, Jacob's different.
Yeah. He looks different.
He looks different.
He's smaller. He's, he's built differently.
He's twice as talented as either of us.
Yeah. He's a really good
guy. Can't wait for him to be done with nursing school so he can get back to kicking.
He is done with nursing school.
Okay. Well, but not the extra nursing school. Anyway.
Okay. But anyhow, so there's some factors that really make it so some people have more of an uphill battle when it comes to getting to a healthy weight.
Yes.
So the first one, let's talk about metabolism. Now, I think metabolism is what most people think is the main reason that like someone like a Bart Gillespie can always just look great and healthy and fit without even having to try. And there's other people that, you know, they look at a muffin and they put on
right.
a couple of pounds.
You're like, oh, well, when I was a teenager, you got that great metabolism and then it slows down. It's like, I mean,
and
kind of.
Yeah, and it is definitely a factor because that, you know, people have different basal metabolic rates. Like, and what your basal metabolic rate is, it's how many calories does it keep does it take just to keep you alive?
Yeah. Like if you just laid on the couch all day, how many calories would you burn? Yeah. Which a huge number, by the way, like a massive number.
Yeah. It's a decent number.
And like I wear a Garmin watch. I don't know how accurate the Garmin watch is, but like spitballing, mine's somewhere in the neighborhood of 23 to 2400 a day, you know? Like, and that's me doing nothing. Like when I'm sick and I'm like, when I stay home from work sick and I stay on the couch all day on my computer, I'll still burn 2,300 calories a day.
And this is something that it's totally a side note, because you mentioned earlier that it's actually really, really difficult to determine your actual basal metabolic rate and how many calories you're actually burning. And, do you want to talk about how they actually determine that, or should we just...
Well, I can say like my Garmin watch, the only things my Garmin watch knows about me are my height, my weight, my age, and my heart rate.
And so it's just estimating.
It's estimating. And the other thing to consider is I'm an aerobic athlete. My heart rate is lower, right? That like that doesn't tell you, heart rate does not tell you how many calories are being burned. No. It's, and with all of these things, it's like it's approximating, which is why, and spoiler, one of my tips for this later on is don't bother, for me at least, and this might be a hot take, don't bother tracking calories. It's not,
we'll talk about
maybe
that.
I don't know. I think it's imprecise enough and it's a pain in the butt enough that I'm like, meh. Yeah,
we'll talk about that.
Maybe you'll disagree, but
that'll be fun to talk. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know how much I thought it was super interesting how they do figure out.
How do they get the good number on that?
So the good number is, It's a process called indirect calorimetry, and they're comparing the oxygen you consume with the CO2 you produce, and by that they can tell what you're doing metabolically
based on what you exhale. That's cool.
It's pretty cool. And so there's, you know, like you've heard of like a metabolic cart that, you know, like the pro cyclists wear that mask and they do their VO2 max test that can determine that. But only for a period of time, you know, as long as you have the mask on, which isn't, you can't do that for very long.
Yeah.
There's also metabolic chambers where actually rooms with the controlled environment that for longer studies, you know, for a day or a days or whatever, people can go in there
really?
And they can take measurements over a longer period of time.
Huh.
And then there's also a method that they use, which is double labeled water.
Huh. I've never heard of that.
And you basically take this, you drink this water that has like an isotope marker that, you drink it, it mixes with the water in your body, and they kind of measure how long it takes for that labeled water to leave your system. And they use formulas based on your carbon dioxide production to figure out your metabolic rate. It's really, really complicated.
I'm really stupid. Can you imagine being the person who can come up with
that's
that?
That's what I was thinking. It's like, how did they figure that out?
Who's the guy who's like, oh, you know what we could do?
Yeah, yeah. And like, I have so much respect for smart people.
Yeah.
I mean,
you need to get back to that as a society. Anyway. anyway.
Yeah. So
dumb people are having,
I guess, the point I'm trying to get is like, we're working off estimations, you know, and you know, when you go to your calorie tracking app and it says you're supposed to be at 2,100 calories a day.
Yeah.
That's just a guess based on...
Give your high school health teacher some grace. The project they have you do on this is not super scientific, but it's hard to be... I mean, unless you have one of those rooms at home, unless you have some radioactive water you're going to swallow and you're...
I think the thing that you can know is if you're basing your caloric intake on a certain number and you're not getting the results you're wanting... You can know that you're probably making an incorrect assumption.
Your measurements or assumptions are off.
Yeah. So
the laws of thermodynamics are. Look at that. I nailed it the first try.
Yeah. I don't know. We just had like a huge meal and I am so sleepy and I can barely talk right now. But yeah, so that's kind of how you determine it. But let's go back to metabolism. So some people do just genetically, just sitting around, will burn 300 to 400 calories a day more than somebody else.
Yeah. That's a thing.
Yeah.
And the same way, like my Prius is more fuel efficient than, you know, a pickup truck. Right.
You know, a lot of this is determined by your age, your size. Muscle mass is a huge part of it. People with a lot of muscle mass.
Muscle takes energy.
Muscle uses a lot of energy. Yeah. Fat doesn't use very much energy.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if I think brown fat uses some energy, but like fat doesn't use energy. Muscle uses a lot of energy.
Yeah.
The more of your body weight that's muscle.
Yeah.
You're going to just sitting around, you're going to consume more calories.
Which is why I assume I'm burning a little bit more than my watch tells me, is my assumption. Based on everything I've read, the consensus is, yeah, you're probably, for most people, it's slightly underreads, but that depends. If I had very low muscle mass, it could be overreading. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. Like I say, if you're not getting the results you're expecting from whatever you're doing with your diet or what, your assumptions might
be. The laws of physics are not wrong. Your measurement is.
Yeah. So that 300 or 400 calories, you know, between individuals, that's a lot. But, you know, when you think about it, it's not a ton, because that's kind of like, what is it? Like, one guy could eat a bag of chips that another guy couldn't. And that's really not a huge, I don't know. It's
four
not
four slices of bread.
A couple slices. Yeah. It's like three slices of bread.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it explains some of it, but not, it's not everything.
It's not. And again, like I think there are certainly some adults listening to this where, you know, you want to take, I think most adults probably want to lose 5 or 10 pounds. I'd hazard that's true. And then you're like, oh, just, you know, those last 10 won't come off. Like you said, it's.
Well, like I was thinking like Ben Bigwood, he's known for being able to eat a lot and have great body composition, be super fast. And he's he's probably like 6% body fat or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
There's something other than just his metabolism that explains that.
Yeah.
Cause that's only like 400 calories. And I guarantee he's eating more than 400 calories more than a sedentary person or someone else, you know? So the next one that I think you might not think is a big deal, but I think it's actually a bigger factor than just your metabolic rate, your basal metabolic rate is NEAT. We've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. NEAT, it stands for non-exercise activity thermogenesis. And this is pretty much everything you do that doesn't include exercise. And so like for instance, like an active person that does manual labor, you know, maybe like mows lawns for a living or something.
Or maybe we could do like a construction worker, right? Like highly, highly active.
Yeah. I mean, they could probably burn 2,000 calories more a day than someone that just sits on a couch all day.
Yeah, desk job to couch guy.
Yeah.
Right.
So there's a pretty big range there, which is not surprising to anybody, really.
And like my job, I feel like I'm probably maybe somewhere in the middle where I'm almost never sitting, but I'm not doing hard work, but I'm moving a lot, you know, like you gotta have to consider like, does your life, cause think for a lot of kids that maybe even if you're in college, you're maybe sitting for an hour at a time, but then you're walking a huge amount every day versus drive to your desk job, drive home to your couch, you know, versus construction worker versus professional athlete, you know, well, I guess professional athlete, that's still exercise, but you get my point, right?
Yeah, exactly. And but one thing that really is kind of surprising is how many, like some people are fidgeters. Like some people just kind of have a hard time holding still. They're just kind of always moving. Like these people tend to talk with their hands more and they can't sit down for very long. They're just kind of moving around. They have a hard time sitting still. Fidgeters can burn between an extra 100 to 700 calories a day.
Who's the 700 calorie a day fidgeter? Actually, every kid in my fifth period. Anyway.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. You know, which is a lot. And the interesting thing about the fidgeting, it's something you can't fake.
Yeah.
Like, that's something that people just do genetically.
Hmm.
And
that's interesting. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah. You know, so that's a really big factor. But then there's a lot of other things like you mentioned, like walking to class. And, you know, there's so many things that you can just do to your... due to your life where you can just add a little bit more of this NEAT.
Yeah.
One thing I always do is when I go run errands, I always park at the very back of a parking lot so I can walk from the back of the parking lot to the store. When I was working in Salt Lake, we had a big parking lot. I would park at the back of it and I'd walk to and from my car about 4 times a day. And I figured I got over a mile or so in just from there.
Yeah.
You know, and that adds up. And like when you go grocery shopping is something,
yeah, that's,
you know,
true. That's,
you know, you're walking around a lot, like you're getting a heck of a lot more, you're burning a lot more calories grocery shopping than you are if you're just sitting on the couch.
Yeah.
You know, like walk places, like walk to church, walk to like, just just find, you know, like washing your car or doing chores or something. Just,
well, the funny, like the stereotype is everyone who goes to Europe talks about, oh, in Europe I felt great, and you know, in Europe nobody's obese, and you come back to America and people are like, it's all the food we eat. I'm like, it's not unrelated, but like, you know, if you like, I've been to Europe a couple times with Tessa, and like, you track it, you walk like 10 miles a day. It's ridiculous. You don't drive. Driving in Europe's a nightmare, right? Like, we rented a car even in England, we rented a car and it was a nightmare. You know, it wasn't fun driving around there. It was a huge pain in the butt. But like here, you know, my grocery store, I'm like, oh, I've got a grocery store right, you know, it would take 30 or 45 minutes for me to walk to my grocery store.
Yeah.
You know, it's a 3-minute drive. So, you know, like, and this I think is one of those cultural things going on in America where it's like, it's people kind of roll their eyes and hear like walkable cities or whatever. I'm like, I don't know. We'd all be healthier people if we were, you know, like walking to, you know, I mean, there's a lot of days where like when I was doing a desk job, where I just wouldn't walk. I'd ride, but I'm like, I am either on my butt pedaling or on my butt typing all day.
And that is a lot of, that's something about people with desk jobs is like, you could have someone that has a desk job and they're in their desk all day. They're driving around all day. They do 45 minutes worth of exercise. That's really not a lot if you're sitting in a desk all day, and otherwise you're just sitting around all day. That's not a lot of exercise, you know, compared to someone that's just is moving around and more active and has a more active job and does more physically. And, you know,
yeah,
like Joe and I, actually, we were plumbers yesterday.
Oh yeah. Yes.
We probably got a lot of neat.
I actually mostly drove to Home Depot 5 times. But you were, but how's walking in Home Depot?
Yeah. You know, but so.
And I don't know if this is too early for your jumping off point, but for a lot of people, like for the desk job people, it's like, you could fidget more. You know, like there's a bit like for you adults who are, have some kind of a weight loss goal. It's the way you eat. I don't know if this is too early for your jumping off.
Well, right. Yeah. And right now we're kind of talking about things that make it, so some people have a more uphill battle than others.
Yes.
You know, why it might be harder for some people to maintain a healthy weight than others. And these, you know, the first factor was metabolism. The second one is just how much movement you do outside of exercise.
I have one to tack on when you're done that I think you're not going to hit.
Okay.
I'll make it fast though.
Do you want to do it now or?
I was going to say psychology. I think different people.
Yeah, that was one.
Is that one? Okay.
I wasn't going to go.
Are we jumping into this
too early? No, you can say something about
it. I'll hit it really fast. I think I experience hunger differently than other people
okay,
do.
Okay, well, and that's actually kind of the next one I'm getting
really?
To.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So the third one is hormones.
Mm.
Is actually a huge part of why some people might have a harder time with weight than other people. So there's a whole bunch of hormones that can affect this. One is the hormones that are produced by your thyroid. These hormones, they control your metabolic rate.
Yeah.
They regulate like energy production and they regulate digestion. You know, the thing with the thyroid hormones is the you know, it's fairly common to have thyroid issues and so forth that would cause this not to operate properly. Like you would be low on these hormones, but it's also very easily treatable. Like the synthetic hormone for this is like identical to the one that our thyroid produces.
You take a pill, it fixes the problem, right?
Basically. Yeah. So
this is the thing everyone hopes they have. And it's like, it's like the medical condition you're begging to have, cause it's so easy to fix.
Okay. If you have this,
ching.
Yeah. It's pretty easy for the doctor to identify, and if you get treated for it, you're just going to feel a whole lot better immediately. Yeah, so,
but most people don't have it.
it's fairly common.
It's common, but most people don't have it.
So that's, you know, so there's those hormones. There's also ghrelin, which is a hormone that's produced by your stomach when it's empty. That
also
makes
for sure the name of a kid somewhere in Utah. Carry on.
But it's the hormone that makes you hungry. That signals hunger. Cortisol, which is kind of the stress hormone, can also signal hunger for some people. But then on the other side, there's hormones that will make us feel full, that'll make us feel satiated. Leptin's a big one. And in people, they become leptin resistant. So the leptin is no longer effective at making them feel full. You know, so they really never feel full. They always feel hungry. So, you know, the ghrelin will signal hunger, but they'll eat.
Yeah.
And they'll just still feel hungry.
And you have to remember, like, we're highly adapted. I mean, like calorie surpluses are a thing that not even like the Industrial Revolution, like in the last 100-ish years, like in terms of evolutionary biology, calorie surpluses happened a quarter second ago.
Yeah,
right?
We don't know
like,
how to handle them. Really.
We don't know how to handle them because your body is designed to be in a situation where you need every single calorie that's on offer to you. You know, like the reward system that we've evolved in our brains around calories and eating is not in line with, because you throw out like in a lot of developing, not developing countries, but when countries kind of get out of the developing country stage, you know, it becomes really common for poor people to be overweight, which would be unbelievably hard to explain to a peasant.
Yeah,
from
any other period of
years
history.
Ago,
yeah,
you know that like the poorer you are, the more likely you are to be overweight. You know, we'll get into that more in just a sec. Yeah. But interesting stuff.
Yeah, there's also like GLP-1 glucagon,
which you hear about,
a lot.
Ozempic and all the other.
Yeah, and that's basically a hormone that tells your brain that you're full.
Mm-hmm.
Insulin is also another one that affects weight gain and appetite, because insulin is kind of designed to signal that we're full. But if our levels are too high, it kind of almost has an opposite effect, that it'll continue to make us hungry, or after a spike and a crash or, you know, so, it kind of behaves oddly if there's too much of it. And then the next one that's really interesting is dopamine, which is kind of where
the happy one.
Yeah, like
that's
the reward center.
I do think different people experience this differently in a way that's difficult to explain. Like Jacob, I really think we experience food differently. Like I tell people, I feel like I don't tolerate hunger well. I tolerate stress well. I tolerate fear, I think, relatively well. I have a hard time being hungry. I don't like being hungry. I really can't stand being hungry. I think there's some people where they'll be, oh, I was so lightheaded at work and I realized I hadn't eaten since breakfast and it was 4 p.m. I'm like, I'm not, I have a desk full of protein bars. Like, I do not tolerate hunger very well. I feel like I'm dying. And I don't think everyone feels that way. And I think this is another thing where like some people, and really I see a lot of, and I want to throw out, just get on my soapbox for 30 seconds. Like being on fitness tech, like the algorithms pick up that you're into fitness or whatever. Like a lot of the way that people talk about people who struggle with weight on the internet is unbelievably cruel and unempathetic and just slobberingly simplistic in the way that they assume everyone's not only that their life and circumstances, but their psychology are the same.
Lazy and they just need to eat less.
Like I heard somewhere that like if one person does it, it's a mistake. If everyone does it, it's like a structural problem. You know, if the average American's overweight, I don't think the average person is making ridiculously bad choices. So I do think approaching this with yourself or with others, just having some compassion with like some people might experience this differently than you do. And
well, and that's exactly what we're kind of doing here, is just explaining why it's going to be harder for.
Massively complicated.
It's harder for some people than others.
Yeah.
And I think this dopamine one's a huge one. And I think this is something I kind of deal with, because my goodness, like when I eat food, I get a major dopamine hit. Like, I think I just get so much more pleasure than a lot of people do from eating.
And even if you don't get the pleasure, it's like eating withdrawal. I guess that's called hunger, right? That like you might experience hunger and satiety might be two things that you have a really emotional relationship with.
Well, that's why kind of we're talking about all these different hormones that control it, you know?
Yeah.
And so some people go around all day and eating is almost a burden and it's just something they do.
Oh, I have to remember to eat. Yeah.
And other people, it's like, it's kind of, they just think about it all day long and they just can't wait for the next meal. And if food's there, they just can't stop eating. And
I love cooking good food. I love going places and trying food. Yeah. I love all kinds of different food.
You know, and it's kind of like Jacob, it's funny because like when I get a plate of food, I'll eat everything on the plate. And it's like, I can just keep eating and not really feel full. I'll just keep eating and eating. Yeah. And I just, it just is like a dopamine rush. And it's just, and I'll clean my plate and Jacob will come and he'll sit down and he'll eat and he'll be about halfway through his meal. He'll get up and go. And it's just like, it's just not as big of a deal to him.
Yeah. I think eating is also social. Like you and I could sit around at a dinner table for 3 hours eating and talking. Right, Jacob will eat for 15 minutes and they'll leave and he'll be like, where did he go? Oh, he left 30 minutes ago. You didn't even notice, right?
Yeah.
So I think maybe being aware of the way that you relate to food. Also, I want to throw out on the other side of this, like if you're one of those people who's like, oh no, I had a cracker for breakfast and it's 6 p.m. and I have, like, you can't be an endurance athlete and do that. You got to figure that out. You know? Yeah. You, like we haven't talked about the other side quite so much. But for some of these kids, like you have to fuel your machine. Or, I mean, we've done several episodes about this. If you don't fuel your machine, like you need to, I think you should have a rough understanding of your psychology and the way it relates to eating, because it's pretty easy for that to get out of whack in either direction. Yeah. Right.
And just kind of knowing why you have some of the attitudes you do towards food
and
how these hormones work makes you just a little more aware of what you're dealing with and why you're feeling the way you are. And so another factor why some people might struggle more with weight than others is some people have a larger number of fat cells.
Yeah.
And so once we're an adult, the number of fat cells we have is pretty much established and set and doesn't really fluctuate. But is children through adolescence, that number can fluctuate. We can develop new and more fat cells during those periods of times, you know, which is why, you know, avoiding childhood obesity is a good idea and so forth, you know, and that's why, you know, maybe our athletes don't need to be concerned about their weight, but there are kids, elementary kids and junior high kids and high school kids that should be, you know, and that's why, you know, your doctor told you that you might need to pay attention to this. But once we're an adult, the number of fat cells we have is pretty much established. But that's not as bad as it sounds if some people have more than others, because it's really not the number of fat cells you have, it's how full they are that can be a problem. So you can have one person that has a lot of fat cells, but if they're all empty, they're going to be very responsive to insulin. You could have another person that might look thin, have fewer fat cells, but what fat cells they do have are completely full and they're completely insulin resistant and can be risking diabetes.
Yeah, we have to throw out that, like, I think a lot of people too, and a lot of these same morons with even dumber people following them in the, you know, gym bro fitness space, like, you have to remember that, like, looking good, you know, or whatever our idea of looking good does not mean that you're healthy, you know, like, and I do want to say, I don't think any person who's 5'10" is healthy at 500 pounds. Right. But like, there's some nuance here too. And again, like I will say, I do not think that your doctor wants you to look like Jonas Vingegaard. I don't think that's his goal, right? Like that's probably not your healthiest weight either.
But there's people that can be skinny fat. Like they can be not very, they're not heavy. They're not super large.
But
they've got fat cells that are completely full and they're insulin resistant.
And they have no muscle. And
you can have another person that's a lot larger that might be still insulin sensitive and their fat cells might not be as full.
It depends, which is the hard thing with all of this, right? There's nuance.
Yeah, exactly. So healthy weight really depends on who you are and it's very individual.
But so, there is a healthy weight. I do want to point out. It's not just like be whatever, right? Like,
no, it depends on the individual. Yes. There's a healthy weight for you.
Yeah.
There's a healthy weight for me. It's probably not the same number.
Right.
So, so then there's just some other things, some miscellaneous things that we won't really dive too deeply into, even though we could for each one of these. Is just kind of your upbringing.
Yeah.
Is a huge factor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of your traditions. Psychology is a huge part of it.
Yeah.
Addiction. Some people are, you know, it's funny because like I was at Costco with Sharon. We were, you know, we always have our immediate family Sunday Thanksgiving, like before we have it with the extended family.
Yeah.
And she wanted to buy like Costco pie. And she's like, I think we need two. I'm like, no, I don't think we need two because I will eat the other one.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we bought two and I just found myself like, I just knew that because I love pumpkin pie.
And the cost, we were talking about this, Costco pumpkin pie is both the cheapest and the best pumpkin pie.
Yeah. And I just like, it's like, I knew that pumpkin pie was out there. There was just so many pathetic times where I snuck out into the, it's out in our garage freezer fridge. Mm-hmm. And I would just be sneaking out there with a knife to go snitch a little piece of pumpkin pie. This, you know, we bought it like on Friday. And I noticed today there was only like a quarter of the pie left.
Wow, there you go.
And so I'm like, wow.
I've got math on that. That's rough. Yeah,
that's a lot.
That equation's not looking good.
Yeah. So, some people just have, just are more easily addicted to things.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think I'm kind of that way. You know, that's why I'm really glad I don't drink alcohol because
and I think more and more starting to understand that like, and we've kind of actually talked about this before, that some of the psychological things that contribute to addiction are more or less present in different people. And there are some people who can play fast and loose with some stuff and other people who can't. I want to throw out too, kind of relatedly ish on that topic. One of my practical things I'd throw out there is if you don't make it like, you know, the big takeaway from this is exercise, you know, exercise and eat well is the big takeaway, right? If either of those things are hard, you won't do them. Like in a weird way, I think for me, I wish someone had told me like, you need to relax thinking this is going to be hard. Cause if it's hard, you're not going to do it. It's like mountain biking is my favorite thing to do in the whole wide world. If I lived somewhere where I couldn't mountain bike and I couldn't, if I lived in San Antonio or some just like, you know, suburban hell where I couldn't ride either of my bikes and like running or going to the gym where my, and doing the rowing machine were my two options, it would be really, really hard. And then I think on the food too, like don't force yourself to gag down food you hate all day long. That's going to last about 3 days, right? Don't try to run, you know, even if you have a huge amount of weight your doctor wants you to lose, don't try and run a 2000 calorie a day calorie, you know, deficit, right? That's not going to work either. Like finding ways, and I'm probably jumping the gun on this, but like, you know, find highly nutritious, you know, for my people who have a late weight loss goal.
Just as like summarizing the rest of my thing.
Fruits and vegetables that you really enjoy eating. You don't have to force yourself to eat. Cause guess what? The foods you have to force yourself to eat, you're not going to eat, you know, mm-hmm. like don't have a Costco pumpkin pie in your fridge is probably,
exactly.
You know, like, or for me, it was like Coke Zero and normal Coke are the same to me. I cannot taste the difference. I'm going to drink Coke Zero. Yeah. Right? Like find the easy, you know, don't make it hard, because if you make it hard, anything you do in your life that's hard, you're not going to do, which sounds like a really cynical take, but like,
yeah. So we've kind of listed a lot of the reasons why it's going to be more challenging for some people to be at a healthy weight than others. I kind of want to do this partly just so like, you know, when you see someone overweight, you can kind of give them a little bit of grace because you know that they might be dealing with something that you're not.
Yeah.
But on the flip side, you know, if you are overweight, there's still things you can do. It just is going to be, it's just going to take some more effort.
Yeah.
And you might need more help and support and so forth. But I just wanted to talk about some of the things that helped me. And I'm not at my ideal weight and I'm not perfect.
You're a lot better off. And hey, I'm giving Dan a compliment here. So this has never happened in the history of this whole podcast. You are a lot better off than you used to be.
Well, is that
a glowing praise? No, but
I don't know
really,
if that's really a compliment.
No, really, truly. Like you've moved the needle more than most people will.
Yeah.
Right.
So I just kind of wanted, cause I wanted to go over some things that helped me because I kind of think I'm one that I would say it's probably harder for me than a lot of people.
Yeah, that's probably true.
And you know, because I love food, I'm always thinking about food. I never really feel full. Like I could probably win an eating contest pretty easily. And I just get tons of pleasure out of eating, you know? So I think I've got some things working against me. But the first thing I did was prioritizing exercise.
Yep.
And you know, there's kind of a debate and it's just one of those debates that just almost doesn't really need to exist. And that's like, which is more important, exercise or diet? I'm just like both.
I don't know. Good luck doing it on one or the other.
Yeah. And that's what I found. Like there's no way, it's really, really, really difficult for me to to be in an energy deficit if I'm not exercising.
I was going to say, if I just, but on the flip side, if I let myself eat just the way I want to, I could not, even if I was a professional cyclist, I probably couldn't outride that. That's true, the reality, yeah, right?
Exactly.
It's more complicated than that.
It's an equation, and you have to work on both sides of the equation.
Yeah. Really, fortunately, if you're listening to this, you have discovered mountain biking, and you live probably, except for that one dude in Bulgaria or someone who uses a really weird city on their VPN. Like you live in Salt Lake, or you live in Utah at least, right? Like this, you have it way easier than most people.
I mean, I would say that if it just came to losing weight, probably controlling what you eat is a bigger factor.
Yeah.
But the advantages of exercise are just
exercise is good for you other than just losing weight. Right?
Exactly. Like the outside benefits are just
worth it, probably easily.
One of the best ways to maintain insulin sensitivity. And it's good for so many aspects of your health and well being that you got to do both. So, but I did kind of find that I did kind of get to a point where exercising a lot only got me so far. And then I kind of started paying a little more attention to the diet itself. As far as exercises go, you need to exercise in all the intensities, because there's a good argument for exercising in each one of them. Because when you're doing kind of the long, slow one, you're burning a lot of fat. When you're doing kind of the tempo zone 3 type workouts, you're burning a lot of calories.
Yeah.
When you're doing the high intensity stuff, you have the EPOC, kind of the afterburner effect, where you continue to burn. You have an elevated metabolism even after you've stopped exercising for a period of time. So really, you need to do all the aerobic intensities. Like actual strength training and lifting weights doesn't necessarily burn a lot of calories,
but, and this is what people forget,
but it building that extra muscle mass makes it so
your body's just burning through calories all the time.
Exactly. Yeah. It raises your metabolism. A reminder though is you're not dieting while you're exercising.
Yes.
It's an investment thing, because if you invest some calories in fueling your work, you're going to be doing more work at a lower perceived exertion.
Yep.
If that makes sense.
Yep.
So you're throwing a little money at it to make more money later, kind of thing. You know, you're investing some calories and you're using some calories, but you're getting more work done. So ultimately you're burning more. So don't worry about fasting while you ride or fuel your work. You're going to do more work. You're going to do better work. You're going to recover quicker so you can do more work sooner. Fuel your workouts.
I will say, especially for the adults though, do be kind of conscious that in the winter, good as Zwift is, you're probably not replacing, the work you're doing.
I disagree.
Oh, well, hey, I think for most people you're doing less in the winter.
If you are doing less, you need to make adjustments to your diet.
Here's the thing. But I think for most people that'll kind of naturally happen. Your hunger will follow that. And do be kind of be caught,
which is why you can't just rely on exercise to lose weight.
Yeah.
Because if you exercise more, you're going to be hungrier and you're going to want more food.
Mm-hmm.
So it almost just kind of balances out, as it should. Because really, if there is a deficit, it should be just light for it to be sustainable. So that's the first one, just exercise. And I think all of us do that.
To this because you like exercise. I was going to say, this is easier for you than it is for most people.
I wonder who's listening. I should probably start exercising.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah.
So the next one I think will be a little fun to talk about. And we've talked about this before, but I want to talk about foods that are highly palatable versus delicious. There's a difference.
We've had this comment. I'll let you have this because where you're going.
This is just something how I think about it. Is so highly palatable foods are foods that are designed to taste good, to be easy to eat, and so they can sell themselves.
Pringles.
Yeah.
Are you Pringles? Pringles.
Yeah.
Cheetos. No, it's your Cheetos.
Chips, corn dogs, like Maverick Pizza, yep. Highly palatable.
Kraft mac and cheese.
McDonald's.
Yeah.
Wendy's, highly palatable. Yep. Taco Bell.
Yep.
Like, you know, like your white breads, your
yep.
cereal, Oreos.
So like the ultra processed foods or whatever. By the way, I hate processed. People are like, oh, processed food. I'm like, hey, you're eating oats. That's processed. Milk's processed. Everything's processed. Processed isn't bad, but I think when you get into this category of the extremely highly palatable, very far removed from the original, it's not that that makes them poisonous, but...
And these foods are dangerous because like they make your dopamine just go off the charts, you know, and they're very enjoyable to eat. And everyone knows, like, you know, you go to Maverick, you buy a bag of chips, and there's like 3.5 servings in one of those bags.
Yeah.
Like who eats that over 3.5 days?
Not me.
Yeah.
Especially if you're in the car driving.
You know, so you end up getting like 700 calories in one bag and
you do not feel anything like full.
And you could eat a full meal after that.
No problem. Yeah.
And so that's kind of the danger of these types of foods. I think though, oh my goodness, when we were driving back from Frog Hollow, Amy bought a bag of those jalapeno Cheetos. Have you tried those?
Those are amazing.
Oh my gosh.
Those are so good.
Those are so good.
Those are better than hot Cheetos, I think.
Way better than hot
Cheetos. They're the gentleman's Cheeto.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like probably the king of highly palatable foods.
Like Cheez-Its for me, another one. Like any cheese flavored puffy cracker type of thing is my favorite.
So those are highly palatable foods. So, and when I'm eating those foods, I'm like, oh, I'm enjoying this because this is highly palatable. This is how the company designed them to be. So I would get this much pleasure and I will keep buying them.
Yes. Now,
I contrast that with the foods I consider
delicious
foods.
No, right.
Yeah. And those are like your chicken, your fish, your steak, your...
I had a meal. I'm this annoying guy. When I was in Rome. No, but like, I'm that guy. One of the very best meals I've ever had, it was the last night before we came home and we were in Rome and I found Reddit, by the way, if you're traveling, you're looking for the best food, do not just Google the best food. You'll get some idiot blogger who got paid to say whatever guy's rushed. But like, everyone said this place where no one speaks English and there's not the menus, like checked all the boxes, right? We went there. I had a piece of chicken with a tomato sauce and some bell peppers and potatoes. They're like ridiculously simple meal. It was amazing.
It was delicious.
So delicious. It was so good. Like that. I love you made this point. I hate giving you credit, but you made this point. We were driving. I want to say we're driving, eating some processed food, like back from St. George or something. You're like talking about the difference between a Cheeto and that meal I had. Cause it's like, they both taste really good, but the adjectives that we use to describe them have very different meanings. Right. And my point that I was kind of making earlier is like, eat delicious, actually eat both, right? Like it's fine that you ate those jalapeno Cheetos, but you should be aware, like that probably shouldn't be a thing you're eating every day. You should probably not have a 700 calorie bag of jalapeno Cheetos be a thing that's in your repertoire every day. I have a breakfast I cook every morning that is delicious, right? I have a whole bell pepper and a whole onion and a cup of frozen hash browns and some Hatch green chilies from a jar, and then I fry 3 eggs. It's extremely cheap. It's more work than cereal, but it's like it's in one pan, and then I dump it into a bowl and fry some eggs, throw the eggs on top. I enjoy eating it while I drive to work. It is delicious, and it's like, I mean, it'll get me almost to lunch, which is for me is crazy, right? Mm-hmm. That'll get me almost to lunch. You know, like you don't have to be a monk. Like being miserable doesn't make you good. I'm on this crusade against being miserable, but doesn't make you good. Your goal should be to be happy, and you can make reasonably good choices and be a happy person, which will make you a more happy person, right? You don't have to eat kale in the dark.
And again, it all comes down to energy balance, you know, and like if you're consuming more calories than you're burning, you're going to gain weight. And so in theory, like you could only eat jalapeno Cheetos
and lose weight.
And if you were burning that many calories, you're not going to gain weight.
50 nutrition researchers have done this. They've lost weight on Cheetos and Oreos. I'm not making it up. Like several people have done this.
But you would just be dying of starvation. You would be really hungry.
Your hair is going to fall out too. Another stuff's going to happen to your body. It's not good for you.
Yeah, it's not good for you, but...
That stuff isn't poison though. And that's the other thing is, in theory, you could also eat bell peppers all day.
And if you're training 10 to 15 hours a week and growing and you might need some of that stuff to help keep your energy balanced.
Or it's just totally inconsequential, if nothing else.
But yeah, so there's just that distinction between, and you just recognize you're eating something highly palatable. Mm-hmm. It was designed to be addictive.
Yep.
Just don't overdo it, you know? And then contrasting that with the foods that we're just calling delicious, you know, that's like your chicken, your fish, your beef, mm-hmm. your seasoned vegetables. Yeah. You know, vegetables don't have to be gross. There's ways you
seriously.
Can cook.
Seriously. Like, I found I don't like raw vegetables. I love cooked vegetables. So I cook vegetables.
Yeah.
Don't eat things you
hate.
And
you can make vegetables taste really, really good.
Don't eat raw kale in the dark.
whole grains, potatoes, rice.
Yeah.
Fruits.
Yeah. Beans. Beans are the best. Beans are the best food.
Oh, beans. Yeah.
Beans are the single best
beans
food.
Beans for sure.
And by the way, I love beans. I would eat beans for fun, right? Yeah. Like, find the foods that are really good for you, that are highly satiating and super nutritious, that you like, and eat those ones.
And I think the difference between, you know, between the highly palatable foods and the delicious foods, it's a delicious food if it makes you feel good after you eat it. And that's like Alan Lim's number one rule with what you eat.
That's a good point.
Is you eat foods, like, pay attention to how you feel after you eat something. And if it makes you feel good, eat more of that food.
A thing I want to throw out that I've heard a lot of people say is like, oh, it's so expensive to eat healthy. And I want to push back on that a little bit. It's not the expense. Like, fruits and vegetables, I mean, well, everything's hilariously expensive right now. But relatively speaking, I don't think fruits and vegetables are expensive. And actually, if you just had a cart full of fruits and vegetables and you're not choosing only Honeycrisp apples and like, it's cheap. It's effort and time. Mm-hmm. To make those foods taste good, there's some skill, effort, and time. And most people are missing skill and time, right? That, like, no, being competent, like, cooking is a skill in the same way that, like, sewing or woodworking is a skill, right? And so I want to, and then for me, it's time. So, like, I do, like, the meal prep thing is kind of legit, you know? Like, I buy a lot of frozen vegetables. Frozen vegetables are way, way easier. They're also cheaper and arguably more nutritious than fresh vegetables. Like, canned vegetables suck. I think it's true that they're slightly less nutritious and they're gross. Like, canned corn versus frozen corn is a night and day difference. So, like, A, find stuff that's really easy, that's really cheap. Don't bankrupt yourself. But then, like, I like beans, but, like, I like to rinse the beans. They don't make you fart, right? And, like, that is an extra step that takes a minute or two. So I will have a giant bowl of washed and prepared beans. I'll do it all at once. It doesn't take me any extra time. Do a whole bunch at once, and then I can throw beans in whatever I'm eating, and it's easy, right? Like, I will cook. My favorite thing to do right now, because I'm also just, you know, bought a house and have no money, I will take a 5-pound bag of potatoes that I buy at Smith's for a dollar or two, right? Like, $2. That bag of potatoes is my lunch, like, half days, unless I have leftovers, right? I will just bake a whole thing of potatoes. I'll just have a sheet tray of baked potatoes in my fridge that I can mash up in a Tupperware, throw some peppers on top of and whatever sauce I like, and a little bit of cheese and ham, and boom, I have a lunch in 3 minutes that's highly satiating, highly nutritious, and really cheap. Mm-hmm. So, like, finding, like I said, if you, only your willpower is an incredibly precious resource and you don't have a lot of it. And if you leave everything in your life up to willpower, your life is going to fall apart in your hands like a wet sandcastle. Yeah. Like, do not try to David Goggins your way through life, because you're going to fail. Like, I leave very little to willpower. Make things easy.
Yeah. So, I mean, basically what we're talking about here is what we like to just call the no-duh diet.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, seriously.
It really, yeah. Like, if you eat a lot of chicken, vegetables, and potatoes, and berries, and nuts, and fruit, it's really, really hard to overeat these types of foods.
If you're drinking enough water, eating a lot of protein, and eating enough fiber, which, by the way, nobody's eating enough fiber, and colon cancer rates are skyrocketing in young people. Like, if you get enough fiber, protein, and water.
But if if you eat out of this other category of foods, it's really hard to overeat. Like, these foods, like, fill you up.
Yeah.
They make you feel better. You know, like Joe said, they are a little more effort, but you would have a hard time gaining weight if you focused on eating these and eat, you know, and the highly palatable stuff, just kind of saving for treats occasionally.
Yeah. And I want to throw out too, jalapeno cheetos aren't poison. You just shouldn't have them be a normal staple in your diet. You know, this is the thing where people like make all the good points and they get 90% of the way there and they're like, oh, you know, the company's trying to poison us. I'm like, no, the company's trying to make money and it tastes good. Yeah. Right. Like there is a cabal. It's just not that one. It's like, it's not poisonous. Or like zero sodas, like people are like, oh, it's going to give you cancer. I'm like, not if you've ever read any of the studies. Like, yeah, if you pump a rat with a gallon of aspartame, it'll get cancer. If you pump a human with 10 gallons of water, it'll kill you. Right. Like,
yeah. You know, so we,
like, the easy no duh stuff.
Is what you look for. That's why, like, I'm a big fan of the no duh diet. Yeah. You just eat food that's good. That's somewhat natural.
Yeah.
You know, that's not too weird and not too engineered and processed and mostly that and occasionally the other stuff.
Like when I drive to St. George, I eat jalapeno cheetos. That's like my thing. I'm like, I don't do this very often. I love it. Have some jalapeno. If you're having a bad day, get a Starbucks. Probably don't have a 600 calorie Starbucks shake every day, you know? Like, you know.
It's like nutrition, like studying nutrition, it's remarkably complex, but it's also kind of simple too.
Yeah, it's weird how it is both really simple and really complicated at the same time.
So, yeah, so focus on those. So the third thing that has helped me a lot, because like I said, I have this problem, like I just always kind of feel a little bit hungry.
Yeah.
And part of it is I need to be okay with that. Like just because you feel a little bit hungry doesn't mean you need to eat.
Yes, I'm working on that. I'm not good at it.
But it's helped so much to really eating foods that fill me up.
Yeah.
You know, and like some of the foods that really, really have helped me that they're easy to eat, fill me up a lot, is obviously foods with a lot of protein in it.
Yeah, protein and fiber.
Yeah. Like Greek yogurt, like Greek yogurt and berries, like Greek yogurt without any sugar, you know, like.
Yeah.
That's like a big bowl of it's like 200 calories and that fills me up till lunch.
I'll throw out the artificially sweetened stuff. Artificial sweeteners are a lot better than they used to be. They do not give you cancer unless you're talking to the dumbest guy on TikTok who, you know, couldn't pass eighth grade science. Like artificially sweetened stuff is a game changer for me.
It really is.
It really is. It's easy to eat. The whatever artificially sweetened yogurt, Greek yogurt I have upstairs is kind of highly palatable and it's protein fluff.
Yeah.
It's great. You know, like,
but also like eating a lot of chicken helps a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can, that really fills you up.
Frozen chicken is relatively affordable. Yeah. Again, everything's expensive, but like frozen chicken's not hard. It's pretty easy to deal with.
Yeah, egg whites. Another one, and Joe mentioned this earlier, beans. With a lot of fiber.
Oh, yeah.
That'll fill you up. A lot of good benefits there. So just eat foods that'll fill you up. Yeah. Like the highly palatable stuff, that doesn't fill you up.
No.
You can eat lots and lots of that.
Yeah.
Okay, so this one's one that I've kind of found is important to be aware of, and that's just the fat that you're eating. Because, you know, it's funny because, like, growing up in the 80s, like, they tried to make it so we didn't eat any fat at all.
Right.
And then,
they'd be like, Tootsie Rolls, fat-free.
Yeah, and then the 90s, like, with the Atkins diet and all that stuff came out where in keto diets and where people were like
eating sticks of butter on TikTok.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
making me question if democracy is viable.
You know, so you're kind of getting a little back and forth messages there. But, I mean, fats are necessary.
Yeah.
Some fats are way better than other fats.
Yeah.
But the thing is I think most people don't have a hard time getting enough fat.
No, you don't. Fat's interesting because it's like, again, it's not poison. People are like, fat doesn't make you fat. I'm like, that is true. Fat is high in calories and it's not satiating, right?
It really is.
A whole stick of butter is probably...
Like in a gram of... What is in a gram of fat? There's like nine calories and there's like 4 in protein and carbohydrates.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So you just, it's just something you have, like if you're trying to control your weight, it's something you have to be pretty sensitive of. Cause like you could have this big healthy salad that's not a lot of calories and you put that big, huge cup of salad dressing on.
Yeah.
It's so highly caloric.
It's shocking where the thing that I realized is like most oils and fats it's the same. The calories, butter, olive oil, it's all the same. Right. So like when I first was trying, you'd go listen to my special, when I was trying to like lose weight, I'd be like, oh, well, olive oil is good for you and butter is bad for you. I'm like, well, no, they're both, it's way more complicated than that. It's like, you know, I you know, if you love butter on toast, great, but maybe don't add, you know, half a stick of butter to everything you cook. Cause like that's a spot where, or like nuts is an interesting, like nuts have a lot of, it's like nuts are hard cause nuts are really good for you. And nuts have a lot of micronutrients that are hard to get in other places.
But you can overdo them.
But it's really, it's like, look at what 100 calories of nuts look like. And then you're like, oh.
Like, speaking of nuts, I would buy nuts unsalted.
Yeah.
Because then you eat them because you're hungry and you want the nutrients. But
salted.
Salted.
Oh, the honey roasted Planters peanuts.
Yeah, that can be dangerous because
That's like an 18,000 calorie drum that I could probably eat in a day without too much trouble. But it's also like the nuts aren't poison, but maybe be, you know, like if you love those Planters peanuts, your favorite thing, great. You can eat those. You know, there's protein in them. There's a lot of great micronutrients. There's some fiber, right? But like, do you know, again, if you're one of our grown-ups where you're like, yeah, I'd love to lose this 20 pounds this year. You know, don't be eating, you know, like fistfuls of nuts all day. Cause again, it's like there is that just bottom line bedrock rule of calories in, calories out.
Yeah. Nuts can kind of fall into the, both the highly palatable and delicious category,
but they're also extremely good for you. And be conscientious.
Yeah. So with fats, you just have to be careful, and you also kind of have to just, you know, there's like your unsaturated fats, your poly and monounsaturated fats, like, are really, really healthy and good for you. But those you kind of have to seek out a little bit.
Yeah. And this is the point where like olive oil has more versus butter. Yeah, but and this is where the nuance comes in again.
Yeah. But the other kind of fats, I think we probably get enough that we're not going to be deficient. And they're just so high in calories that you got to be careful. No, there's some really good substitutions. Like I always use Greek yogurt instead of sour cream.
Yeah.
Like I use cottage cheese instead of salad dressing.
Yeah.
You know, there's some easy substitutions you can make that can kind of keep it tasting good, but not.
I just want to throw out on the keto thing. If you're a completely sedentary person who lives in urban hell and can't exercise, maybe there's something to it. Some people, or like, and like some, no, if you have auto. I'm skeptical.
Yeah,
or if you have like autoimmune diseases, not, your doctor might recommend more fat. It's not sustainable. It's, I don't know.
Anything that's not sustainable is not a good way to try to lose weight.
Yeah, the people eating butter on TikTok are idiots. Yeah, you hopefully already knew that.
Yeah. So you just have to be really aware of the fats.
Yes.
And because it seems like the fats don't really fill you up that much, but they're just tons of calories.
They're also necessary for your body to function and aren't poison.
Yeah.
All of those things are true.
Okay. So tracking, you mentioned you're not a fan of tracking.
Are we going to have different opinions on this?
So
you're always scared of having different opinions, but that's okay.
No, I think that tracking can be very valuable. You can't track year round.
No,
but I do think that you do need to have some periods where you do track what you eat. Cause it's really enlightening to see, you know, just to see how much, and the thing I would say with tracking too, is when you're tracking, you really need to try and like actually measure, like look at the servings.
Yeah. You can't eyeball stuff, which is kind of another thing I'm going to throw out, is unless you want to go around your life all the time with measuring cups, like it's hard to like, and this, by the way, is intentional. What does a tablespoon of peanut butter look like? That's hard to, you know, on your knife, you're going to use a spread it on your bread. That's pretty hard to eyeball. There are better methods, by the way, that we could use for this that food companies do lobby against. They do not want you to understand how many calories are in some of these things, right? Yeah. The servings per container.
The servings
thing,
are ridiculous.
By the way, in Europe, that's not a thing, right? They say how many calories are in 100 grams of this thing, which allows you to, and in Canada, I'm that guy again. I'm just so sorry that sucks. But like, it allows you to have an idea of like, oh, in 100 grams of this, there are this many calories, right?
Oh, interesting.
So, which there's a reason we don't have that in America. Yeah. Lobbying is the cabal, not everything else. But like here's my take on calorie tracking. I don't think it's for kids. I think it's, especially with the type A personalities you get here, you will have people obsessing and getting really emotionally involved with a thing where there is a huge amount of error. I actually think for a day, it's kind of, it's interesting. But then the thing is, you always modify the way you eat when you're tracking too. It's like, if you could actually rigorously have maybe a day or two where you're like, I'm going to eat what I would eat in a normal day and just kind of count it up. Or maybe even it's like maybe in just one of your meals, kind of get an idea. You might be like, oh, wow, this meal I'm eating has no calories in it. And that's maybe why I feel lightheaded after lunch. More likely than not, especially for our adults, you'll be like, wow, that stacks up, right? For a lot of people, it's like soda consumption or
juice
or other stuff, right? Where it's like, so I don't know. It's just so hard to do with anything approaching accuracy.
I was going to say it can. I honestly think it can be a really powerful tool, but just know that it's going to take some effort, and you know, like if you're measuring out some of the serving sizes, you're going to be shocked. Like like what a serving of cereal is.
It's hilarious. Yeah,
you know,
it's,
like totally like a bowl of cereal is like two servings.
Yes.
You know, and so, but it kind of makes you aware of some of those things, and it kind of makes you aware that like, wow, that was 300 calories and it didn't do anything to affect how full I am. Whereas if you had 300 calories of a Greek yogurt or something, you know, you'd feel very full.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's a powerful tool. I wouldn't do it all day, every year, all day, every day for an entire year. I would probably do it during periods for like a week or something, just to kind of see like maybe why things aren't going the way you want them to.
Yes. That's fair.
Yeah.
But do know it's hard and the serving sizes are wildly inaccurate. And I think especially for a kid, don't live by the calorie track. I live by the calorie
track. Yeah, and a lot of what we're talking about, again, we're not talking for our...
For an emotionally mature grown-up with a fully grown frontal lobe, it can definitely be interesting.
Yeah. It's a powerful tool, but it can't be your lifestyle. You know, you gotta just do it occasionally to kind of get back on track and calibrate things. And, you know.
It is helpful, though, because it allows you to make those swaps, like the low-effort swaps, where it's like, I really can't tell the difference between 2% and skim milk on my cereal. I really can't. Yeah. You know, or like for me, like literally like, oh, dude, I need to replace cereal, right? Like, I'm like, the amount of cereal I need to eat in the morning to feel full is pretty hard to get around in the math. It's like a budget, right? Mm-hmm. I'm like, I just can't, you know, I don't want to say afford that because that's not the mentality I want you to, but you know what I'm saying, right? I'm like,
oh, yeah.
I'm like, I think that,
it,
you know,
it
I'd rather
It makes
invest.
You realize, too, how hard, like, going out and burning 600 calories doing exercise is kind of hard, and eating a bag of jalapeno Cheetos is pretty easy.
And this is where the kind of thing where I'm like, if I had to pick one, it does come down to food more. That's just the reality. Like I did a really hard Zwift for like 45 minutes and I burned 600 calories, and that was me going,
that's a lot.
That was going balls out on Zwift.
Yeah, that's
right?
Hard
like,
to, yeah.
That's, I'm like, dang, so, that's pretty easy to eat. I could go and like, you know, if you're going and doing that and eating four bowls of Reese's Puffs, the exercise is still good for you in other ways. But again,
but
for my adults with a weight loss
energy
goal,
balance circumstances.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So, yeah. So tracking, the next one is just your carbohydrate timing.
Yes.
Timing's super important. And kind of what I mean by this one is just like, if you know, like right before you go exercise is a great time to eat something that's highly glycemic.
Yeah.
You know, because it's going to help you have a better workout. Mm-hmm. And also like, this is kind of a good time if you want to eat some of those highly palatable foods.
I love toast.
This is a good time to do that because it's kind of a win-win because you kind of scratch that itch, you know, where you get to eat some of these things that you just really enjoy eating. That's going to serve as fuel for your exercise. You know, and you're timing it so that it's going to get burned up instantly. You know, it's not going to cause your blood sugar to spike. It's not going to. Yeah. So just timing your carbohydrate consumption is huge.
That Costco, you know, Costco bagels, the Costco cinnamon raisin bagel with some butter on it is awesome, right? The math on that bagel is the same. The equation is the same. There is a practical difference eating that an hour before you go out on your training ride and on your way to bed. Like there's a practical, complicated difference in the way you're going to experience the fullness in, and yes, and again, I'm really skeptical of these people, but like also in your insulin response to it, you know, like the math is there, the calories are there, the law of thermodynamics is true, but like, this is another thing.
But the insulin response and the blood sugar response and
will affect. It is a different
how it affects your appetite and your
yep,
hunger. Yeah,
yep,
if there's, yep, it's yep, different.
Yep.
It's like,
it is different.
It's like, yeah, it's simple but it's complex.
Yep.
Kind of thing. Yeah. So just timing your carbohydrates. One thing I have found that could be like a lot of times, like a lot of people think they're fueling their workout with a lot of carbohydrates, but they're actually also including a lot of fat as well.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're doing this, be careful if you're eating like a cake or a muffin or something.
Yeah.
It has a lot of carbohydrates in it, but it also has a lot of fat.
Yep.
And so that is more calories. So when you're fueling your workouts, I try and find fuel that has less fat in it, basically. And,
yes.
You know, and that can be like a lot of breads and,
yeah.
You know, but sometimes a lot of muffins and cakes and stuff might have more fat. And
yeah.
Like, you know, it's still going to fuel, there's still a lot of carbohydrates going to fuel your workout, but you're just going to get more calories. And
yep.
So just something to consider. So,
by the way, if the muffin's all you have, it's better than nothing.
It's awesome.
You know,
and if you're craving a muffin, that's a great time to eat it.
Yeah. Arsenic and uranium are poison.
Yeah.
Anything you buy at a store isn't.
So we're kind of way over time. I'm going to go through these next few really, really quickly.
Sorry, I yapped too much on this.
One thing that can really help. Oh, sorry. Do we need to cut that?
Stop smoking. Just kidding. Don't vape, by the way. That's unrelated to this, but that's another.
Thanks.
Dude. No, I don't know.
Just, okay. You know. So the next one I was going to talk about is just increasing the amount of time between your dinner and your breakfast.
Mm.
Which is kind of, one way of saying that is like, try not to eat bedtime snacks.
Yeah.
You know, because I don't know how valid these things are or not, or if this is kind of influencer stuff, but apparently there might be some benefits from having periods of time that you go without eating. You know, there's, it's supposedly good for like how sensitive you are to leptin and it's good for blood sugar and it can increase fat metabolism and autophagy and all that kind of stuff that, but it's really could be helpful to like, you know, eat your dinners earlier, not eat anything until breakfast. And you kind of just have that period of time where you're not, you know, where you're not eating.
Some of the Jacobs of the world are going to listen to this. I'm like, what are you talking? You're eating after what? Like,
yeah, I'm not endorsing like intermittent fasting or anything.
Nah.
I think that's just another way to lessen the number of calories
you're consuming. To the extent any of those diets work, it's because they make your calorie balance better at the end of the day.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like,
but I think this is just something that's not that hard to do. A lot of times when you eat a bedtime snack, it's not because you need it. It's just because it sounds like fun.
Yep.
And so that's something that's pretty easy to do that can help. Sleep. The next one's sleep. I could go spend so much time on this one. I'm not. Just know that if you're neglecting sleep, it's going to be harder to maintain a healthy weight.
Everything else in your life is going to be a mess.
Yeah. You know. I mean, just think when you have that bad night of sleep, what are you craving the next day?
Oh, yeah. You're craving a Starbucks full of sugar and caffeine. You are craving a McDouble for lunch. You're craving pizza for dinner, and you want to lay down and go to sleep at, you know, 8, and then you stay on TikTok till midnight. Happens all the time.
Yeah.
Careful.
So, you know, I mean, maybe we'll just kind of, I've got more things.
I'm sorry. I threw out too much.
No. You're good. This is good. I think people kind of get the idea. So I say we just kind of wrap it up that, you know, some people, this is easier than other people.
Yep.
It is for other people. And, you know, and so I guess when we see people that are struggling with this, we shouldn't judge them too harshly.
No.
You know, but if this is something that you think you might struggle with more than other people, that's, I guess kind of join the club, you know, because I kind of feel like I fall into that camp. You know, this is something that takes really conscious effort for me. It's something that I have to be fairly vigilant on, you know, because, you know, like with the holidays coming up, if you consume an extra 1,000 calories for each party you go to,
it adds up.
That adds up, you know.
It adds up. So, it's hard to get away from, right?
And I think really the only way that this can be done so it's actually going to be meaningful and have a lasting effect is if you do something that's sustainable.
Yep.
You know, so any diet that is like, you know, where like a carnivore diet or,
oh my gosh,
a keto diet.
Please.
Or, what all these.
Or just, or for me, it was like the eating, it was the eating raw kale in the dark mentality. Like, I'm going to punish myself. If I feel joy, I'm going to be fat, right? Like that weird, I needed therapy really bad. But
like all of those diets, like nobody is going to be able to do that for the rest of their life.
No.
But like, if you take the no duh diet where you're just really focusing on eating those natural, like, you know, your chicken, your vegetables, your nuts, your berries. Try to eat as much of that as you can.
And make it as easy as you can. Make it as easy and not complicated as you possibly can.
If you just kind of gravitate more towards that kind of stuff and less towards the highly palatable stuff.
Yeah.
It's going to be very sustainable.
Yeah. Eat cake on your birthday, not as your after school snack. It's that, it's like, you know, you foods aren't poison.
You can eat the jalapeno Cheetos right before a ride. That's a great, eat them during a ride.
Sure.
You might need a little extra scratch to
probably not ideal, but like, how are things going on Maybird? Well, hey, you should eat Cheetos on your ride. No, but you don't mean right. Like find,
just time. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really complex. It's complicated, but not really.
Like, yeah.
So
if it's complicated and hard, you're not going to do it.
Yeah.
Too bad.
So, wow.
Wow. That was a lot of stuff.
So what should our,
disclaimer, it should be disclaimer.
Or should it be jalapeno Cheetos?
Jalapeno Cheetos. I do want to finish with a disclaimer again. I was going to say for our top writers, for all of our writers, if you lost weight, that will not only make you slower, which is the incidental concern, it's bad for you. Please be aware that for a lot of people, there is a psychological hell waiting for you if you try and, you know, look like a pro cyclist. If you are... for the 14-year-old girl listening to this, please, 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 please do not take this as, oh, okay, well, let's see how light I can get. So much more dangerous than you realize.
Yeah,
I think really this episode is kind of for the grownups and for maybe the people on the cusp of...
Exactly. It's for the grownups, but it's also for those that are like, you're graduating. You're
starting college soon.
Yeah.
Your life's going to change.
You know, you don't really have time to train 10 or 15 hours a week, so... Your nutrition is going to be part of the equation to maintain.
You're starting a career. You're going to get hitched to someone who thinks cute. Maybe you have kids in a few years. Like just all of the things that you're going to, you just be thinking about it. For our kids, make sure you're eating enough and don't get hit by cars. That's the takeaway for you guys.
For the kids, get stronger and worry about that.
Yep.
The weight takes care of itself for you guys.
Do you think we did enough disclaimers?
Yeah, this is.
I really hope we did enough disclaimers. Send us questions.
If we didn't, like, we would be the two worst people ever to sue. So.
I know. Yeah, I was going to say, you could just look, my checking account's just like a frowny face emoji. anyway, I try to do like Face ID on my bank app and it just says, nah. Secret words, jalapeno Cheetos.
Sure.
You have to use the accent on the N or it doesn't count. Everyone be safe. Stay warm. Oh, by the way, we're grateful for stuff. Happy Thanksgiving. Grateful for you guys. Dang. We're like, do this whole podcast where we're like totally ungrateful. We're like, here's a youth podcast on, you know, like, we should have mentioned that. Happy Thanksgiving. Jalapeno Cheetos. Bye.